anomaly. Something that deviates from what is standard, normal or expected. An oddity, peculiarity, irregularity, inconsistency, incongruity, a rarity.
I have been a nurse since long before I could have heard that bookish girls should look and act a certain way. And how stupid geek when I am utterly antique because I do not care what normal people say.
Hi, my name is Sarah. And I have this whole entire book of Star Trek stickers that are too cool to put on any of my dumb stuff. And I am an anomaly. So, welcome to Anomaly Supplemental. This is my second episode on Babylon 5, this time season 2. I finished watching it just about a week ago and watched it in 2 weeks. Because you really needed to know that. And, I have to say, I knew exactly where to go with the review when I was doing season one, because that was more like what I felt about the show coming into it so new, and, you know, having only previously watched like Deep Space Nine, what I thought about it compared to that, even though I personally don't like to compare them. But this one, I'm a little more unclear, so hopefully it will unravel as I go. So I have to say, first off, I was completely shocked that in the very first episode, Sinclair is just totally gone. I knew Bruce Boxleitner was going to be in the season two, but I assumed that we'd get a farewell episode for Sinclair at least. But no, yeah, it's Bruce Boxleitner, Leitner, however you say your name, right away in this second season, he just comes right on Babylon 5, and it's like, yeah, he's the new guy. I have to say, I like Bruce Boxleitner a lot better. Sinclair had started to grow on me a little bit more by the end of the first season, which I feel like I did say. I mean, Bruce Boxleitner is like the coolest part of Tron for me. So seeing him in like a show for all times is kind of an awesome thing. But I wasn't sure how he was going to fit in, you know, just being shoved into the cast like this. I have to say, watching through the second season, he still had some of Sinclair's really corny lines where you're like, did you really just say that? And did you really just mean to say that? It just feels, it feels huge. I think the second season is going to be a lot harder to do a review show on because it definitely is a lot bigger. There's a lot more going on. There's a lot more undercurrents, a lot more story arcs, most of which I don't want to go into because I feel like it is not something that would translate well into a podcast. It's definitely something that you should check out yourself. Definitely was seeing what people were saying by saying that the second season and the subsequent seasons are more, you know, serious, more, there's more story and more, you know, just more stuff. I remember I was wearing a Next Generation t-shirt and this one street vendor was like, oh, you watched that show? And, oh, have you ever seen Babylon 5? Because it's really awesome. And I was like, oh, I've only seen the first season. And he's like, oh, well, it only gets better. So you should definitely keep watching it. I have to say, I'm not really sure what I think about the it gets better thing because I could see people saying it gets better because it is more serious and there's more story arcs. But I don't know. In some ways, I was a little bit afraid with as serious as it was getting that we were going to lose a lot of the more personal aspects of the show because that's what's more important to me. That's why I watch a show because I want to see like the more personal stuff. Yeah, I wanted to have a great story, but I don't want it to be just serious all the time and like you don't get any character development. It's just story development. I feel like character development is just as important as story development. That said, there was a lot in this season that I liked, and seriously, I have, like, mammoth notes on the thing that I will not even get to because I have so many, especially because some of them are just, like, really silly observations about the episode as I was watching them. So I think probably what I'll do, since character development is kind of the most important thing to me, maybe I will start with how the characters have changed over the course of the second season. I think I mentioned that my favorite character is Jakar, probably. I don't know why, because I know he's totally creepy and disgusting, but I don't know. He's really a noble character, and he always really does want to do the right thing, and he really has the best interests of his people at heart. And I think that I really admire that he's kind of like, he'll do whatever it takes for the good of his people. He doesn't even care. He would just die for his people. That's how committed he is. Definitely, they toned down the creepy in the second season, which is nice because I feel like it helps people take him a little bit more seriously. I feel terrible. I just totally forgot the name of the one lady who I don't really like. Shoot. I'm trying to look at my notes to be like, what's her name? The blonde telepath type lady. Why can I not remember her name? Yeah. That's not so good. I can't remember her name. She's one of my least favorite characters. She was a little bit more bearable in the second season. I feel like they didn't give her so much of the, I'm a telepath and I'm miserable because I can hear everybody's thoughts. Like, she wasn't like Tin Man. You know, TNG reference for those of you who get it. She wasn't so much as like that this time. That said, they were doing some interesting things with her character, which I will get into later. Some surprising things with that character that I did not see coming. As I said, Bruce Boxleitner, who I'm going to say his name two different ways every time, I'm sure. As Sheridan. Yeah, Sheridan, he really great addition. I felt like he still had some of Sinclair's corniness, especially because he seemed to, especially in the first, 10 episodes, have a saying for everything. Oh, that reminds me of a saying. Like, I stubbed my toe. Oh, that reminds me of a saying that this guy used to say about this. Or, there's hamburgers for lunch. Oh, that reminds me of a saying that an old wise man once told me. Like, you're kind of like, it's a little corny and cheesy after a while, and do you really have a saying for everything? But that's it. I really like his character a lot. Susan kind of was the same mostly from the first season. Definitely same from the last half of the first season, because I feel like she kind of went through a lot of changes and became more vulnerable with people and learning to trust people, and that she didn't always have to be such a, you know, hold everything close. I feel like there are a lot of really cool scenes, especially between her and Delenn. I liked, that brings me to the other thing I was going to say. Delenn, okay, so remember in season one, I was totally left on a cliffhanger because she went into this weird cocoon thing on the wall and was changing into something, and that's how the first season ended. Well, that was a huge thing, right? Like, that was a huge thing. And we were like, what's she going to look like? Oh, what's going on? Is she going to come out? Is it going to be the same actress? Blah, blah, blah. All that. And, yeah, I start the episode, and she's in the opening credits, a picture of her, what she looks like after the transformation. And it's kind of like, you seriously did that? It would be permissible if it was just in the DVD menu that they spoiled her, which they did, P.S. But because then you're like, well, the DVD came out years and years and years after the show was out, so they could assume that everyone had already seen it. But this was the actual opening credits of the TV show, meaning it was on. They didn't change the credits. That was how it was when you saw it when it was airing for the first time, which means that everybody totally got major spoilers about what Delenn was going to look like. So I'm kind of like, that was kind of stupid, a stupid move. I know they probably didn't want to make a totally separate credit and have her as her old self. But I think they should have just instead of her transformed, they should have just had Mira Furlan and have a picture of her as the cocoon on the wall just for the two or three episodes until she actually came out of the cocoon. And then they could show us what she looked like. I would have had a lot of respect for them if they had done that. Plus, I think it would have been kind of hilarious. Franklin was, I think I remember saying, well, actually, I shouldn't say I think I remember because I totally do. I really was ragging on him last season because I really didn't like him. And he was really annoying and he kept on doing stupid things. But I have to say, he started growing on me. I was really surprised. It took a whole season and a couple episodes, but he started really growing on me. It was the episode, I think it's Gropos or G-R-O-P-O-S. I'm pretty sure you said Gropos because that would be stupid if you said it all every letter. In which, I think it's Paul Winfield guest starred, which was pretty awesome. For those of you who don't know, he is the captain guy in Wrath of Khan who, like, shoots himself because he has, like, a, the SETI eel on his ear. And then he shoots himself and stuff. Captain Terrell, I think. I think it's Terrell. And he also played... Oh, shoot. I'm going to lose, like, every cool point I ever acquired in my life because I can't remember his name. But... the episode, you know, Darmok and Gelada Tanagra. He's like that guy, that alien guy. Oh, I'm so mad at myself that I can't remember the name. But that just seems to be the theme of this show is that Sarah doesn't remember people's names. Anyways, I think that seeing the dynamic of where Franklin came from, seeing his, you know, his dad, kind of understanding maybe why he does things the way he does. Getting more character development for Franklin, it kind of made me like him better. Plus, I don't know, he just started... I especially liked the... I feel like Susan, you know, was really, like... She knew what it was like to have a dad who was kind of rough and, you know, they love you, but you can't really tell it all the time. So that was kind of cool getting to see their relationship develop a little bit more because she was kind of like, yeah, I'm here for you. Let's talk. And, you know, he kind of really appreciated that. And I think seeing him like that, seeing him wanting to talk to somebody, seeing him a little bit more vulnerable actually made me like him a lot more because he always seemed a little bit self-righteous and, you know, kind of holier than thou in the first season. And I think seeing him in episode 10, Gropos, was like... It felt like he was finally like a normal person and that he wasn't seeing himself as, oh, I'm better than everybody, you know? So I think that was really a turning point for me with Franklin, definitely. Garibaldi is just awesome as always. Like, I think he's like one of my favorite characters in the whole show. He's basically like Bruce Willis. Just not Bruce Willis, but he totally is Bruce Willis. He's like Bruce Willis's long lost brother or something. He's always on top of things and he just always knows what to do and he's really funny. And his character didn't really seem like it. He underwent much change from the first season, but that's definitely something that, you know, me as like kind of a newbie watcher, I could have missed. I totally am open to that. And if I would love it if any B5 fans want to write me with, you know, your opinions or the way you see things, the changes or whatever that the characters have undergone from season one to season two. That'd be awesome. So just drop me a line because that would be really cool to talk about. Londo, I feel like I had a complicated relationship with Londo from the beginning. He made me laugh a lot. He had a lot of funny lines, but I have to say that kind of took a major turn in season two. Like, I still wanted to like him, but there's a lot of things that he does in season two that I don't really want to go into, really, because it's definitely something that it figures into the entirety of pretty much the rest of the series, I'm guessing. But he makes some really crappy decisions that screw it up for everybody, and it's kind of like... It's written really well because you feel bad for him. You feel really bad for him, but at the same time, you're like, you're the one who put yourself in this place and you've been given time after time after time so many, like, opportunities not to do the wrong thing and you keep on choosing the wrong thing. And seriously, like, it's one of those things where it's written very well because you understand that side of him, because I think everybody has that really selfish side that's like, well, that side that thinks they're doing the right thing, quote unquote, but it really isn't. You know, I feel like I can identify with him in certain ways just because we've all kind of made the wrong decision and sometimes we've even been given the choice to go back on it or fix it and our pride has gotten in the way or we've been like, you know, oh no, I can't go back on it now, even though you totally could. And, you know, then you totally regret it later. So, yeah, the Londo character is definitely a complicated one and one that I have very mixed feelings about. Although I have to say, still, I think that's a credit to the writers that it's such a complicated character when he seems so simple in the beginning, just as like some funny guy who's a good foil for Jakar. He's a lot more than that. By the way, the telepath's name is Talia Winters, I just remembered. So that was embarrassing that I couldn't remember her name. Of course, there are the like this kind of secondary characters, Lanier and I can't remember the other guy's name. But, you know, I really liked what they did with both those characters. Delenn's aide and Londo's aide, they really, really got a lot of character development in the second season. And I feel like they definitely deserved that. I feel like it only added to the story. And I feel like anytime you can make a character have more depth and to them, even if they're like more of a secondary character, it's a really wise move. Speaking of which, I can understand them two being in the opening credits because they totally deserve it. But Natoth is not even in the second season at all, and they changed her. I forget what the actress's name was who played her in the very beginning, but they changed her in the second season, which is really disappointing because I did like her. And then they had this other girl, and she's only in like one or two episodes, but she still had opening credits. But still, that isn't as inexplicable as the one dude getting opening credits, like the flight guy warned someone, and I'm just like, he probably had all of 20 minutes screen time in the entirety of season 2, and like, why is he in the opening credits? And like, unless I'm totally forgetting something, we were not even introduced to him in the first season. He just suddenly popped up in the second season, and he has his own opening credit. So that was a little confusing, because I'm kind of like, am I supposed to understand who this guy is? I didn't do any reading, but I'm curious why the first actress stopped playing Natoth, especially since, I forget what episode it was. It might have been Spider in the Web, I'm not sure. But I feel like the actress who played Natoth in the beginning actually came back in an episode and was playing like a human. And I'm kind of like, that's weird, I wonder why she had to stop being that character, but could come back for like this tiny little guest appearance. That was kind of weird. I'm going to have to do some reading on that and see what's up with that. I realized that I mentioned Delenn earlier and her transformation, but I didn't really talk about her as a character and how she changed. Obviously, beyond the obvious changing her appearance, she definitely probably is one of the most changed of all the characters, because I feel like she still has that ethereal kind of, you know, otherworldly thing. I think she probably is one of the best portrayals of an alien I've ever seen, because I really do feel like she just has something really different about her. Like the way she acts, she is really just seems different. A lot of other people just seem like, oh, it's a human with alien makeup on pretending to be an alien, but I feel like she does really good at it. And I really liked the how her trying to figure out more about being more human, you know, kind of reveal more of the childlike side of her, kind of being curious about everything that has to do with being human. There's a lot of really like humorous parts, like her not knowing what the heck to do with her hair, and the only person she could think to call was Susan, which is funny because Susan is kind of like a tomboy in a way, but at the same time, that's what I like about Susan, is that she's really tough and she knows how to do everything, but she sleeps in silk every night. It's like, that's how she is. Susan has, you know, has her cake and she eats it too. She definitely shows that you can be really capable and really awesome at what you do, and still you can like the girly things. It's not like liking girly things is going to make you, you know, be taken any less seriously. So I really like that about Susan. I feel like she's definitely the very embodiment of being an anomaly, for me anyway. So yeah, she definitely had a lot of interesting development. They also seem like they're going for a relationship possibly between Sheridan and Delenn, and I'm still not sure how I feel about that. Kind of works, but it's kind of weird. I'm not quite sure about that. I forgot to mention that Sinclair, who I believe is played by Michael O'Hare, made a reappearance as Sinclair, which gave fans a little bit of closure in The Coming of Shadows. Coming of Shadows actually happened to be one of my most hated episodes ever, because it was so depressing and horrible That's basically where the crap hits the fan for everything. But I have to say, in that really awesome performance by Andreas Katsoulis, I think he's one of the standout actors. He's always giving it everything he has, and he does not rely on the fact that he's got all that makeup on to, he doesn't phone it in just because he looks like that. He totally goes all out every time. I'm always really impressed with his acting. One thing I have to say before I close up the character section of this is that there are a lot of really awesome guest stars, which was really kind of cool this time around. Like I said, Paul Winfield, they had Dwight Schultz, which was really cool. They had Bee Queen Adrienne Barbeau. They had Carol Struycken, who, if anyone doesn't know who that is, well, if you don't know who anybody else is, then you have problems. But Dwight Schultz, A-Team, one of the best. He's a Murdoch, one of the best characters there is. Carol Struycken is Mr. Hom from, I believe he's in TNG and DS9, Deanna Troi's mom's aide. And he's also in Battle for Endor as King Tarak, which is one of his cooler credits. But yeah, so that was kind of cool. Oh, Paul Williams, which he is the voice of the Penguin in Batman animated series. And he's in, if anyone's ever seen The Night They Saved Christmas, which I really doubt, might be one of the only people. I showed it to my husband and he said it was psycho and never wanted to watch it ever again. I don't think it's that psycho. But yeah, so a lot of really cool guest stars. So anyways, I will jump into some of the finer points that I wanted to bring up. There's definitely going to be probably some semi-spoilers. So if this is not something that you want to hear, I would definitely stop listening. Just because I don't know how much I can talk about without giving out spoilers. I think there are a lot of things that I didn't see coming with this second season. It definitely had a darker feel. Basically, the Centauri and the Narn are back at war with each other. And just the conflict and the turmoil that brings to Babylon 5 is definitely a struggle that everyone is feeling. It's something that kind of affects everything. It's hard because Sheridan really wants to give the Narn all the help he can because they're the ones that are being attacked, but there's not much he can do. His hands are kind of tied because, Earth doesn't really want to get involved. It wants peace. It just wants peace. It doesn't want to get involved in anything even. So he's got that conflict of he's trying to listen to orders, but at the same time wants to do what's right. Because Jakar keeps on, he comes to him every once in a while asking for help, and he knows that's really hard for him because he's a very proud person. So that was kind of cool getting to see that dynamic of Sheridan so quickly, forming kind of a bond with Jakar and wanting to do everything he could to help him. There's some crazy things like Talia. I don't know what is going on with that character, but pretty sure at least how the second season ends, we are never going to see that character the same way again, because apparently she's a sleeper agent, and it was just like, where did this come from at first? Although I was really impressed with season 2's continuity. They referenced very often the first season, and I very much respect any show that does that. SG-1, I feel like, is the best show for continuity. It's always referencing itself, and I just feel like all that does is build the world that much more solidly in your mind, and I just think it's a really awesome thing to do. And I feel like people are really lazy, and they do not do it in shows as often anymore. It's kind of like anything goes, kind of how I feel about with Star Wars. But that's a debate for another day. I just feel like continuity is integrity. And if you don't have continuity, I just don't know what you have. But, people probably disagree with me on that. Continuity means a lot to me, and it was really awesome to see them bring a lot of things back. Like, they brought back Leeta from the season 1. She was the telepath that was the station on Babylon 5, who I'm pretty sure he got the feeling, I can't remember if she was in the credits or not, that she was supposed to be the main telepath. And then all of a sudden they changed a lot of actors because Susan Ivanova wasn't even in the show. It was a different person, and they changed a couple people. But I thought it was really cool. They brought Lita back and divided loyalties, and Talia, basically a sleeper agent for PsyCorps. She didn't know. It was just like she had, you know, this kind of like a sleeper agent inside of her. And when she got the passcode, you know, sent to her brain telepathically, basically it would overwrite her entire personality, and she would just become this, you know, assassin agent or whatever, spy slash all that stuff. So yeah, she just suddenly becomes a psycho, rough, mean woman, lady, crazy. But like, they kept on doing weird things. Like, Talia, like, kept on acting all weird and kind of predatory and creepy. But I feel like that kind of wasn't really a great move, because Talia was acting a lot weirder than she normally does. Like, she just wasn't acting like herself, and that kind of made me think, well, duh, then she's probably the sleeper agent for PsyCorps. That was also the episode where we found out that Ivanova has latent telepathic abilities that she doesn't want anyone to know about, which is part of the reason why she's so adamant about not having anyone scan her, because she basically, PsyCorps are like telepath Nazis, and if you have even a little bit of that, you know, even if it's not major, even if you can't read people's minds, they are going to take you and train you. Speaking of which, I have to say, the episode, I can't remember what it was. I think it was A Now for a Word, I believe that was called. That was a really cool idea for a show. Just the show from the point of view of, like, newscast. Really neat. A really cool idea, and it was executed really well. I have to say that the PsyCorps commercial that they put on in the middle of that was really amazing. And hilarious, and you should definitely watch that episode, if only just for that commercial, because it was so funny. Plus, it had a little subliminal messaging that took me about 3 minutes to get my DVD player to pause in exactly the right spot so that I could actually read what it said, because apparently we don't have a slow motion on our DVD player. If we do, I haven't found it. Yeah, so I was that dedicated. They brought in the whole story arc of Night Watch, which is interesting, definitely an informant undercover kind of operation, trying to, you know, getting people to think, oh, you're doing this to help bring peace, but really what it is we want you to tell us every single little thing that's going on so that we know every single little thing that's going on, you know. It's like, well, which reminds me, the Warren guy, I don't even know his name, but the flight guy, the guy that is credited in the credits, who's hardly in it, but they don't, unless I'm mistaken and can't remember, but they don't credit the new security guy who's in it a lot. But anyway, it's like, that would have made sense if he was in the credits, but he's not. So he was kind of an interesting new character, kind of a stand-in for Garibaldi when he's not around. But one of those characters is interesting, but I'm not really sure what the purpose of that character is. But that's possibly something that'll, you know, develop as he is, speaking of which, part of Night Watch, which is why I brought him up in the first place. So he's kind of had the whole dichotomy of, oh, well, how much do I tell, you know, should I tell, inform on things that have been happening? Because I just joined this to get the money that they were giving, you know. So it's got that whole thing, and I could see, you know, some more character and story arcs coming from that. I talked a little earlier about Delenn and Sheridan and how they seem to be having a relationship thing going on, and how I wasn't sure how I felt about that. Well, on a side note, they really shouldn't have given Delenn bangs. I know that's really a weird thing for me to mention, but the bangs look so odd, and it's like, she just is looking more human than Minbari, and I don't know. I don't like it. Plus the whole part where she, like, had her hair all crazy out and everything, and she called Ivanova and, like, oh, you know, help me with my hair, I don't know what to do. Like, she had it out of that, the crest thing on the back of her head. Last time I heard that the Minbari crest thing was like a bone that grew out of their head. So how does she get all her hair out from under the crest thing on the back and then push it back down later because it's almost always underneath that thing, except for like a little piece in the front that she like curls, and her bangs apparently. It's like, I don't know how that works logistically, but maybe it's not as attached or something. But anyway, that was something that kind of annoyed me. Little things like that annoy me, like in Revenge of the Sith when Padme is on the balcony and she has a comb and she's like combing the very ends of her hair because somebody decided, oh, wouldn't it be cool if she had a comb and was combing her hair? And she has like curly spiral tight curls, and you're like, girls with curls don't comb their hair. I mean, especially when it's dry and it's already set in curls, because if you comb curls, it turns into a frizzy rat's nest of heck. So I know it's totally like not, it's like a silly thing to even notice, but I always notice stuff like that. So yeah, what I was going to say was I kind of am a Delenn Lanier shipper, actually, because I don't know, he's really loyal to her and he's always kind of just, you know, there, and he's always doing stuff for her and she seems to really appreciate him. And I know he probably has feelings for her. I could be wrong, but I feel like he really does. But she probably just looks at him as like a friend. But I don't know. Maybe it's weird, but I kind of am like, you know, voting for them as a couple. Oh, the whole Vorlon thing, I was going to say, it's kind of like totally was a cop-out. I didn't see what they looked like because in the one episode, you find out like they're one of the ancient races, which was not really surprising. I guess it was supposed to be. But it wasn't really surprising to me that they are one of the ancient races. They always talk about the ones in the very beginning, because I was kind of like, that's kind of a duh. I thought it was kind of a duh. But anyway, in the episode where, like, Sheridan's in, like, this train in Babylon 5, like, going to the garden, I guess, and this one Centauri, like, leaves a bomb, which I could have told him that. That guy looks so suspicious. And then there's this bomb the size of a laptop on the chair. It's like, seriously? Like, you didn't see that? And it was blinking? It's kind of like, that would be my first clue. But anyway, so he like runs and jumps out of a train, and there's something to do with gravity that I'm not quite sure about, and he's like kind of floating down slowly, and he just happens to have fallen out at the garden where everybody was waiting, like it's like Jakar, Delenn, and like but so he's floating down, and like for some reason, even though he's going really slow, they're like, oh, well, when he hits the ground, it'll turn into regular gravity, and then he'll smash all over the floor. So then, I think it's Delenn's, like, goes up to Kosh, and she's like, you know, you gotta do it, or whatever. So, you know, his exosuit starts to open, and this glowing figure emerges. And you're like, oh, I'm gonna get to see what a Vorlon looks like, finally! And then it's like, oh no, because they totally copped out, and everybody sees it like their own species, which means he looked like a Mimbari and a Narn, and I think it was supposed to be a human, what Sheridan saw, but I have to say, that was some freaky looking human, like, looked like a freaky mannequin man with lipstick on. I don't know what they were doing with what Sheridan saw, but, that part was ambitious, and the non-cynical side of me thought it was a kind of a cool thing to see, like this angel and angelic, you know, Vorlon flying up to like grab Sheridan as he's falling. But it was also kind of bad, like in a way badly done, because they didn't have, you know, they didn't have the CGI stuff and the other kind of GI stuff that we do now, so it didn't look as realistic as it could have. But speaking of Vorlons, basically, the whole storyline with them is that the major darkness is coming back, and they're like one of the ones who've been, you know, trying to fight and keep it from, you know, coming. And basically, season two is all about, you know, there's a new alliance now, and you know, Sheridan and Delenn and Kosh are all kind of like, you know, we're gonna be united and we're gonna fight against the darkness and everything. That's what's going on. So what I'm going to do to wrap up the episode is I want to kind of talk about some of the highlights that I thought were funny or especially good. Or I have to say that Acts of Sacrifice was one of the most embarrassing but hilarious episodes I've ever seen, because basically, like, this new species is coming and they're trying to decide whether they want to make an alliance with Earth or whatever. Because basically it's all, right now it's all about, you know, alliances, because this whole Narn Centauri War thing has thrown everything into craziness. And I feel bad, because I feel like someone who was probably, who probably understood the show a little bit better could probably give a better review. I can't really speak as much to the major story arcs where it's very intricate, like the whole thing with the war, that the whole thing with, like, the Night Watch, the whole thing with Psycor, the whole thing with, you know, there's a lot of intertwining things there. And it's one of those things where I get it while I'm watching it, but then when I try to get my thoughts together to talk about it, it's kind of more difficult because there's so much there. So I feel like I'm not doing it justice by explaining it. So that's why I tend more towards the character side, because that's what I understand, that's what I like, that's what I remember. So yeah, Acts of Sacrifice. Basically, there's this alien guy, and he's like, if, you know, after all the song and dance, he finally decides, oh yeah, we'll make an alliance with you and everything. But then they find out that the way they seal deals is that he will have sex with whatever species they're trying to alliance themselves with. That's not ally themselves with, not alliance themselves with. So basically that falls in Ivanova, and like, it's hilarious because she's like, what the heck do I do? I'm not gonna have sex with this freaky alien guy. And so she just decides to, like, totally outsmart him and say, you know, oh yeah, like, we'll have sex, but, you know, we can do it your way, but, you know, because probably if we did it my way, it would kill you. And, you know, of course, you know, applies to his sense, his ego. And so basically, he's like, oh, no, you know, I can do it your way, too. And so she's just like, basically jumping all around, acting like a crazy person, jumping around him, saying weird lines from songs and stuff.
You ready? Good. Oh. Boom shabba lubba lubba, boom shabba lubba lubba. Hey there, three bags full. You come here often? Yes, I do. Dinner shabba lubba lubba, drink shabba lubba lubba, kiss, 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 grab!
And it's really embarrassing, but at the same time really funny, and just like such departure from the usual character of Ivanova. I feel like it must have been really fun for the actress, because she kind of really got to probably let loose with that. Definitely get to do something different. And that was very funny. Confessions and Lamentations was a very interesting concept. They had the concept of this alien species has this disease that they are susceptible to. But they went a really long time without having it, so it became something they told children that you got when you were bad or when you did bad things to try to keep them, to keep doing good things. But the problem is that it resurfaced the disease, and then nobody wanted to say that they had it because they were like a religious, you know, they were religious, and basically if it was the equivalent of saying that they had the disease that they were evil or that they'd done something really wrong and this was a punishment. So nobody told each other, so it was going to turn into this huge outbreak. That was a very interesting concept. I don't remember what his name was, but the doctor who was that species, who was friends with Franklin, was a really great actor. When they had the whole, they were having a gift shop on Babylon 5, they had a really funny part with Londo being really angry about that there was an action figure made of him.
It doesn't even have any attributes. Attributes? Do I have to spell it out for you?
Oh, I see. So you feel like you're being symbolically cast in the bad light.
Also kind of a cool highlight, we got to see, I believe for the first time, Earth, the San Diego wastelands. It was kind of cool seeing Earth And in this one, I feel like we haven't seen much, if any, of Earth in the past season. Also, wanted to mark Spider in the Web, episode 6, I believe, seems to be the first mention of Bureau 13, which is definitely something we're going to be hearing about as time goes on. So definitely a lot of great moments, including the end of the Long Twilight Struggle. It had a great ending with Sheridan shaking hands with Jakar and the whole formation of the Army of Light. Definitely cool. So all in all, I feel like there's a lot of improvements. I definitely wouldn't say that there's anything that hasn't really improved. I kind of miss some of the more lighthearted stories that the first season had. They had a couple of, not lighthearted, I shouldn't say. I like standalone stories. I don't like stories that are constantly connected to each other, even though I do like continuity, so it's kind of ironic. But they did have quite a few kind of standalone stories. There just always usually was a reference made to the arcs that are going throughout the whole thing. There's probably definitely a lot more I could say, but don't want to make this too long. So all in all, I would definitely say the second season is worth watching. I feel like Bruce Boxleitner only brings the quality up even more so. And I just feel like, once again, there are just so many great performances and so much great writing and some really great moments and definitely a lot of relationships and different relationships developing. I feel like it's kind of cool to see different people interacting with each other where we didn't see them interacting as much in the first season. So I would definitely recommend it. And if you get a chance, drop us a line, send us an email. You have no idea how encouraging it is to hear from people who have actually listened to the show. We'd love to hear from you, and we appreciate that more than you can know. So until next time, you've been listening to Anomaly Supplemental.
All the cool kids keep enthusiasm rationed, right down to the last explosive ounce. But I'd rather indulge my many passions, even if my squaritude's a little too pronounced.
If you wish to contact the Anomaly Supplemental, you can at the email address, which is moregirlygeeks@gmail.com. That's girlygeeks with a Z at gmail.com. Or if you like hearing the sound of your own voice, like I do, you can call the voicemail line at 248-419-GEEK. Yes, it's one of those numbers that you can use alphabets on, and that's 248-419-4335. To stay up to date with Anomaly and Anomaly Supplemental News, you can follow them on Twitter at Anomaly Podcast. That's the at symbol, A-N-O-M-A-L-Y Podcast. That's all one word. Check out the Anomaly blog for geeky articles and Anomaly Supplemental show notes. Find it online at anomalypodcast.com. To meet other anomalies, please join the Anomaly forums. Click on the forum icon at anomalypodcast.com. The theme music is used by permission of Marion Call. Thank you, Marion. Find out more at marioncall.com. Or, of course, you can follow her on Twitter at Marion Call. That's MarianCall. Anomaly was created under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Works 3.0 Unported License. Oh, say that three times fast.
And I won't ever play it cool, so I won't ever once be bored. Oh,
I have been a nerd since long before anyone heard that fair and scrawny was the latest fashion trend. Still be a geek after nobody thinks it's chic, because I don't require approval in the end.
Music by Kevin MacLeod.